Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
It's time for the Friday gathering now, and I'm joined in the studio by political editor with the Irish Examiner, Elaine Loughlin, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin South West, John Lahart, the leader of AIM2, and TD for Meath West, Pather Tobin, and Oisín Coughlan, who's spokesperson for the Stop Climate Chaos Coalition. Now, one of the stories during the week was this proposed tourism tax on hotels. This is in Dublin. Apparently, there's agreement between the Dublin councils that this be introduced. It could happen as early as September, but those who were listening to the programme yesterday will have heard Minister Patrick O'Donovan saying he thought it was a terrible idea and shouldn't go ahead. John, what do you think?
Yeah, I was, I'm in two minds about it, having been a member of South Dublin County Council for 16 years. So there's four local authorities in Dublin. One of the issues in South Dublin, Talla is the county town, we all have county towns, is that a lot of the hotels aren't functioning as hospitality venues anymore. So I'm just wondering what a hospitality tax would bring in, or a hotel tax would bring
in something. I mean, Hazel Chew said yesterday possibly 12 million in Dublin City, which would make a huge difference.
So that's Dublin City, and that I suppose we're all invested in Dublin as Dubliners. And I do get that. I disagree with the Minister on this thing. I think Dublin is a little tired. I think Dublin is feeling a little unloved. So I think it does need an injection. I also take the tourism piece in terms of hotels are under pressure, but I just want to go back to my county. There's two constituencies, Dublin Midwest and my constituency, Dublin Southwest. So if you take, it's one of the biggest hotels in the country, City West, 1,000 rooms. It was correctly being used for those who were fleeing war in Ukraine. But in terms of the South Dublin economy, here's just the facts of that. That's 1,000 bed nights gone, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, a major conference centre, a major event venue, a major amenity. And that's a really significant loss economically to South Dublin County. And there would be colleagues of mine in Dublin City who would say it's similar in the city. So what's the answer to that? I don't know, but I'm just telling you that in South Dublin County, in my constituency, I don't see a hotel tax raising an awful lot of revenue. In the city, I heard that some of the upside of this would be 250 additional city cleansers. That would be really vital and really welcome. So there are upsides to it. Far be it from me as a former councillor either to say, look, you know, if the councillors in Dublin City Council decide on this, I think we have to have some respect for it. I'm not sure what government role there
Do you like the idea or not?
I think it's a good idea, but I actually think what John said at the end is the key thing. It's the kind of thing that sounds to me like the councillors elected in Dublin City and surrounds, or an elected mayor of Dublin, should be able to make this decision without central government vetoing them. They have a responsibility for the city. This sounds to them like an idea. They're collaborating. All four councils together isn't very normal for that they collaborate. If they think this is a good idea, they should be allowed to go ahead with it. And it's like a 1% tax on the cost of your hotel room or your hostel or whatever would raise 12 million for the city. It would help with cleaning, with safety, with
toilets,
amenities. I think it's a good idea.
Pather?
I think it's a shocking idea, to be honest. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, that last year we saw a 30% decrease in the number of visitors coming into the state, a 31% decrease in the spend of tourists in the state. And at this time, they're deciding to put up a tourist tax, which will make, again, it more expensive. And Dublin is fiercely expensive already for tourists. And that's one of the drivers for the reduction in the number of tourists.
But if the amount of Irish people who are going away, say, this weekend, they're paying it. They're going to Spain, they're going to Portugal, they're going to London. They're paying it. Nobody blinks an eye.
Well, I think in places like, I say, Venice, where there's capacity issues in particular cities, that they can't actually really accept that many more visitors, there's a logic for a tourist tax in those particular locations. But like, tourism takes in about 10 billion euros to the economy. It's one of the biggest indigenous sectors that we have. We're facing down the barrel of a tariff war, which is going to have a significant effect over our own GDP, our own tax take, our own income. And whoever thought it was a good idea to tax a sector that's already in decline, it doesn't make sense at all.
Mm-hmm. But 1%, so if you're paying 100 euro for a bed, you're paying 1 euro towards the city being able to provide the services you want, or 2 euro on a 200 euro bed. That's not going to be the reason you choose not to come.
Well, first of all, everything is marginal. So there's already people making decisions not to come to Dublin and to this country due to the fact that it's becoming extremely expensive. And the idea would be that when you have a decreasing sector, that actually you'd go in and invigorate that sector. You'd be actually putting in supports to help that sector attract more people.
But does this not have that aim too? In that you make the product more attractive.
Yes. Now, we are putting 8 billion euros away. We're squirreling 8 billion euros away in budget surpluses on an annual basis. We have an ability to centrally government fund local authorities. The government actually resiled from that ability back during the last crash and put more pressure on local authorities to raise their own funds. We do have the funds in this country to be able to clean up our streets, to put more Gardaí on the streets, to make our capital more attractive.
So we don't need to bleed the tourist for the money because we have it.
We don't need to bleed a sector that's already in decline.
But Paddy, do you know how much even they're talking about, as Oisin was saying? Like, do you have an idea even of what the levy would be? Because it sounds very marginal. It does sound very marginal. And as someone who, I would say I walk in the city 3 days a week, and it's an amazing city, and in the sunshine, it's a particularly amazing city. But it's tired and unloved in parts, okay? And again, if directly elected people decide, and I think it's quite a courageous decision of them to make as elected representatives. They're often criticised about it. And if they, in their wisdom, say, actually, you know, this is a reasonable idea, it's empowering ourselves, we're taking power into our own hands here, it's not an onerous, it doesn't sound to me like a particularly onerous tax.
I think we also have to look at who will be paying this tax, because, okay, we do have our domestic tourism and people coming up for the country for GAA matches and concerts and all the likes, but we hope that a lot of people will be coming in from overseas. And in most countries, there is a tourism tax in place already. So people are very familiar with paying it in their own country. So it probably wouldn't be a surprise to see it on the bet.
And seeing the benefits of it directly would be important as well.
If the sector was on a high, if it was on a different stage of that economic cycle, I could see an argument made for it. But, you know, as John actually mentioned, between 10 and 15% of all the hotel beds in this country currently are in a contract with the state. And, you know, that actually, what that has done, it has taken out of those locations and has reduced the downstream tourist income significantly. So the adventure centres, the restaurants, the cafes, the pubs, etc., they're all suffering significantly at the moment.
But they all benefit from cleaner streets and better facilities around the cities for the tourists that come.
But there's other ways to fund that. There's 8 billion euros going a begging on an annual basis now in savings by the state. Some of that money should be going into
If the council's got more of the local property tax back, which was the aim of LPT in the first place, wasn't it? We wouldn't need this, John.
Well, they can, of course,
increase it
annually, either plus or minus 15%. And I'm not advocating, you know, times are the cost of living and that people are squeezed a little bit. I am a believer in principle in local elected representatives taking as much power as they can and making decisions that can really impact on their local authority area. They don't have a lot of powers. We didn't have a lot of powers. Oisin's right about the mayor piece too. But I think the proof of the pudding here would be the evidence on the streets. Dublin is a little tired looking, a little jaded looking. It needs investment. City councillors.
Why should that come from tourists and tourism?
Yeah, because the tourists leave a footprint in the city, and it's an international practice. It's not a particularly onerous tax. I would say most people wouldn't notice it on their hotel bill, but they leave a footprint.
That's really sneaky, though, isn't it? The tourists coming in won't notice it.
They're making a contribution, people pay LPT, make a contribution. Commercial rates make a contribution. Tourists can make a contribution too because they're using the city.
They are making a contribution. They're leaving 10 billion euros behind in our state on an annual basis,
Also the wear and tear of tourism, Paddy, as well. I absolutely get the hotels. I heard their representatives talking too, and that's why I'd like to see the figures. What are the figures that are being proposed to me, unless I'm completely wrong? Hotel tax doesn't seem to be particularly onerous. And if you're talking about raising 12 million a year, given the amount of visitors that come to the country.
Only. Yeah. Okay, well, listen, let's move on now, because this week we had the Climate Action Plan for 2025 published. And Oisin, I know you're concerned about, you know, whether there's enough urgency around this plan. Does it go far enough, quickly enough?
Short answer is no, it doesn't. I mean, it talks a lot about 2030, and obviously we have a big challenge for 2030, but it seems to be doing that partly to avoid having to talk about 2025, because there are legally binding targets for the end of this year. We're not that far off them. We're like, the projection is we might be 6% over the limit for these 5 years, but there's nothing that I can see in this plan produced this week to actually address that in the coming 9-10 months. So it's kind of like, oh well, we're not going to make that one, so let's talk about the future one, because it's kind of further away and it's easier to talk about.
Well, they
that.
Said there's going to be wins coming through from what was announced in 2024, and then we'll have the big plan in 2026.
Yeah, because that's kind of like saying, well, we're going to fail slightly this time round, but we'll try harder for the next target. And we do need to try. Like, we're much further off track for 2030. The projections are we're going to miss that by 50%. So that's a much bigger challenge. But I don't see in the plan either really key actions on that. There's some interesting talk about renewables and getting fast track. Offshore renewables, that's interesting. But on transport and on things like LNG and data centres, there aren't actually actions in this plan that will make a big difference by 2030. Where, for example, is the moving together strategy, which is to reduce traffic congestion in our cities and reduce pollution, which was produced last year. There was public consultation. It was ready to go to Cabinet. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael wouldn't let Minister Eamon Ryan, then Transport Minister, bring it to Cabinet. But where has it gone? Is it going to come now?
I suppose that brings us to the political point, doesn't it, Elaine? Like, is there a very different emphasis now that we have the Greens not being part of government?
I think so, and I think Oisín mentioned LNG and data centres is another issue as well. So you have, I suppose, conflicting messages now coming out from government. On the one hand, we have had this report this week around our climate action and need to reduce emissions, but the current government has already come out and said that it's in favour of pursuing an LNG station, given the fact that we are really in crisis when it comes to energy in this country.
Darragh O'Brien was unapologetic about that when he was here. He said, look, the fact is we need it. We need it certainly until we have our sustainable fuel up and running.
And it's temporary as well. I mean, he was making the point, and I heard
that
interview.
A lot of things start out as temporary and become permanent.
No, but I suppose the critical point he made was that Corrib, we get 30% of our gas from Corrib, the rest of it is coming from Scotland, and we have an oil reserve, but we have no gas reserve, and that we'd run out in a matter of days. Are we mad about it? No, we're not mad about it, but it is a temporary measure to bridge that gap. I think last year, for example, to Oisín's point, at the height in terms of renewables, wind was accounting for 40%, and actually over the lifespan since 1990, the energy reduction in terms of emissions has been significant. And I think that feeds into the data centre piece too. I know it's accounting for an increasing amount of energy, but actually the amount of energy that we're using that's produced from that's fossil fuel based has been the biggest reduction piece in it. On the transport, and I get the transport is a significant piece, and I would be quite radical about transport, quite critical of the NTA, for example, in terms of cycle tracks are fantastic and I cycle, but actually a lot of them in my constituency impede the movement of public transport. And I've raised that, we've had robust conversations about that. But we're getting 1 million passengers a day into buses. I think is it 100,000 rural people now using public transport for the first time? And that is, as Darragh O'Brien said, at a time when the economy is thriving and when the population is growing. It doesn't mean that we do, and the report says it clear, that we have to turbocharge what we're doing and really mobilise people who are fatigued.
Okay, but you have that on the one side. But then are we committed to allowing data centres to go ahead, given that we know they account for 21% of our energy demands?
Yeah, well, I have a few data centres in my constituency, and we also have one of the first district heating systems off the Amazon plant on Belgard Road, which heats South Dublin County Council and lights South Dublin County Council and other buildings in the area. So that's harnessing the wasted heat from that. And I'm aware from discussions with AWS, Amazon World Services, these companies also have pretty rigorous footprint requirements of themselves to reduce their carbon footprints. So I think we're going to see evolutions. Dara mentioned the other day about on-site energy production.
So we leave it up to them?
No. But what I'm saying is government, he clearly outlined that the offshore renewables is a significant part of this. But these companies too know that they have their obligations as well to meet in terms of
Father?
Energy.
So the messages come from the government are incredibly confused. We have a really outsourced amount of electricity being consumed by data centres compared to any other European country at the moment. The government is going in a polar opposite direction in relation to climate change in terms of its data centres. What they're saying to the public is, you know, you've got to tighten your belt in terms of your energy consumption. We're charging you the highest electricity in Europe, so you'll reduce your electricity consumption. We've charged you €1 billion on fuel taxes, so you reduce your fuel consumption. But, you know, data centres, they're fine. They can go in any direction they want. And that's really unfair. It is poor in terms of people's own experience. And it's really holding the country back in terms of getting to grips with
what
reducing
would hold the country back,
energy
Pather,
consumption.
What would hold the country back, Pather, is actually ignoring data centres and their role in artificial intelligence and the potential for Ireland to be a world leader
but here,
in
the
artificial deal,
like,
intelligence.
The whole conversation about AI is, you know, AI is a separate situation. It doesn't have to deal
AI
with climate change. It doesn't have to. It doesn't have to accept the fact that we have a climate change crisis at the moment. It is completely cosseted by the government. We're not going to question it. We're not going to challenge it. We're just going to give it an unfettered, unregulated growth pattern into the future. But everybody else, you guys better tighten your belts. You better get out of your cars. You better reduce your consumption. You, like the rest of the population, is the target of this. And the other big issue I have with the government's approach to this is the lack of infrastructure being built, right? So we have been hearing about offshore wind turbines for 30 years at this stage. There are 7 offshore wind turbines in total off the coast of Ireland. There have been more government conferences about offshore wind turbines than there are actually wind turbines.
But we saw only this week the problem with getting those through the planning process and all of the objections to the one in the west, which was in the headlines over the last few days.
Yeah,
it's not easy.
In fairness, it's not just the objections. I think to outsource objections as the main blockage in terms of the delivery of these projects is wrong. We have a planning system that is, first of all, it is far too cumbersome, far too difficult. We have a planning authorities that don't have the staff to be able to do the planning. And Bord Pleanála has never had the necessary resources to be able to get these planning applications through in the first places. And there are many areas where there isn't the same level of public opposition to them as well.
Oisin, you were nodding in parts, but then sitting back for others. So go through all of that for us.
I want to agree with Pather about something. I think there is a risk that the public go, oh yeah, so data centres and LNG companies can do what they like, but we have to tighten our belts. Now, but I would actually challenge that framing about tightening our belts. It is the way it often gets presented. But climate action can actually help address the everyday material concerns of people right now. If we help people retrofit their homes, they get warmer homes, lower fuel bills, less dependence on fossil fuels, cleaner air. Oh, and by the way, we reduce pollution. So it can be a win-win-win. And as John mentioned, people love public transport. When we get public transport, rural as well as urban, people just enjoy it and it helps them. And it isn't a sacrifice for the future of the climate. It is just something, it's a good public service that we should provide. And we need to present climate action more and more that way. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to electricity, people don't really care, much as I might like them to, when they turn the switch on, whether it's coal from Moneypoint or whether it's renewables, as long as it comes on. So that's the state needs to lead that transition away from fossil fuels. And that's where I'm really worried about what they're doing both on LNG and data centres. And on the LNG, I mean, I heard you question Minister O'Brien, but he dodged one question. So let's say, for example, maybe we do need a state gas reserve. We could discuss that. There are various options and maybe this isn't the best, but maybe we need a reserve. But he skipped over the fact that in order to do that, he didn't need to entirely scrap the 2021 policy statement of the last government that there'd be no LNG infrastructure. They could have just amended it to say, actually, there will be a state-owned LNG infrastructure. What they've done now by scrapping that, and they haven't been kind of held to account on this, is they've opened the door to commercial LNG. And the government's own energy security review said there's no need for commercial LNG. It doesn't contribute to security because it's just more supply.
What are your concerns around that then?
Because basically, the people who want to import commercial LNG aren't concerned about climate and they aren't concerned about energy security. They want us to use more gas and do more data centres and use more electricity. Whereas all the studies that the government themselves did say gas demand can and should and must come down over the next 15 years as we transition to renewables. So we may need a temporary backup emergency reserve, but we don't need more additional demand and flow of gas. We have plenty of gas for our everyday needs from Moffat.
If the state is signing a contract with that commercial provider, they'll dictate
the terms, don't they? These are separate things. So the government may purchase or rent or whatever it'll do for its state state-backed emergency reserve, but they've scrapped the overall policy. So therefore now, any company can just say, we want to have another LNG terminal just to bring in gas. And this is what Shannon LNG have said they want to do. We want to bring in gas. We want to fire a gas-fired power station. We want to fire up new data centres. They just want more. They want more supply, more demand, more electricity use. They're not interested in yeah. climate. And the government's doing nothing to actually regulate that.
I'm interested in the interplay with this whole situation and Donald Trump, right? Because we know that he has said, you might be able to head off some of the tariffs if you buy our fossil fuels, right? You've got that on the one side. Then I was watching him last night and he was talking about artificial intelligence and how he was going to ramp up the building of data centres in America to cope with how brilliant they're going to be on the artificial intelligence front. Now, all of that plays into our vulnerabilities, doesn't it? If we're not in the game, if we're not building data centres and allowing them to go ahead at the same rate as America, or if we're not on the same page as Donald Trump, we're going to fall behind.
Well, first of all, I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure the government took that decision about the LNG state-backed one and the kind of the confusion around that could allow others as well before Micheál Martin went to Washington.
Yeah, so they could but now you have the pressure on the table, though, don't you? You've got to buy our stuff. Our fossil fuel in order to be our friend.
Yeah, but I'm not convinced that because Ireland's small, really. I'm not convinced that saying we'll buy their LNG and we'll compromise our own future around fossil fuels. I mean, the programme for government, it's actually clearer than any previous programme for government. It says we're going to take decisive action to radically reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. That's stronger than the programme for government that they did with the Greens. Mm-hmm. And yet the first things they've done seems to be to say, we'll buy your fossil fuels, Donald Trump, if you'll allow us to keep selling you Viagra. And I don't think that deal's going to work for a start, because I don't think Donald Trump is, I wouldn't trust him to keep his side of the deal. And I don't think it's in our future, in the best interests of our future, because we're heading towards 30% of our electricity already being from data centres, whereas in the rest of Europe, it's less than 3%. So we've done our fair share of data centres for AI, and I think we should be regulating AI, not just facilitating
it. I think, one of the key points that both you raised, Oisin, and Minister Dara Ryan raised was that sometimes, climate measures can be, seen as really onerous and that they're a negative thing, and especially when it comes to maybe the agricultural sector, that farmers are going to have to completely change and their livelihood will be in jeopardy. Whereas climate action and measures can be viewed as a positive thing. And John, you mentioned the district heating there. It's great that Amazon is doing it of their own volition, but why are we not legislating that if we have a new data centre that they must link it to a district heating system?
I think that's going to be part of the second climate budget.
You think it'll be part of it, but there's no urgency around legislation on this.
Well, I would feel urgent about this, okay? And I wouldn't want the public to think that because the Greens are absent in government that there isn't a sense of urgency about this. I mean, the Minister was pretty direct. The figures that are presenting us, I think the biggest challenge we face, one of the challenges we face is climate fatigue among the public, okay? Yeah. And I think we have, there are very imaginative ways of addressing that. One is public consultation and making sure that you bring people with you and don't impose so much, which I kind of feel was a real weakness of the Greens, and they had many strengths, but that was a real weakness that they didn't carry the public with them.
But the
climate fatigue piece, I think we need to address that. If we were to stand still, I think we'll now and do nothing by 2030, we'd get to 29% of our emissions targets as opposed to 51%. So just one figure on the transport piece, we have real challenges on the transport piece that we can all play into. And to your point about it's data centres are off the hook and the ordinary Joe's soap aren't, we're an island economy and there are certain compensatory things that have to be done to keep our data centres and these corporate companies bring billions to this economy, Pather, and ensure a quality of life that we wouldn't have if we didn't have them on shore.
Unfortunately, in the last 5 years, climate has become a wedge issue, if you like. So in other words, a big chunk of Irish society now are actually railing against some of the issues that we're talking about currently. And that's because I agree with Oisin, we haven't gone for the low-hanging fruit. So the low-hanging fruit, for example, is, in Meath, we want a rail line from Navan to Dublin. It's public transport's not been built. The Western Rail Corridor, public transport not being built. Metro North, €300 million spent on it, not being built. So the public are actually crying out for public transport, but it's not being delivered. And yet what they see is the stick. So they see the stick as the government are leaning into taxes to change behaviour. So this year, for the first time, carbon taxes will actually exceed VAT on fuel. Now, just to put into perspective, 4 billion euros...
That's the cost of public transport, which is why there's a million users using public transport, because we've significantly cut the cost of public transport.
But the point is, for so many people in that commuter hell that are living right around those four counties around Dublin, they don't have access to public transport to bring them to the locations that they want to do.
Agreed.
So what you're doing is you're actually using the stick to tax them before they had the alternative to be able to get into the bus
in
the first
Ireland,
place.
We need more park and rides, probably
the
like
the
they have
The other
in
element is consent, and John's correct about this. There's been a lot of cases around the country now where I think the local authorities have gone in and they've used you know, very kind of draconian processes to impose particular projects without the proper public consultation, and that has put people's back up as well.
You want to say something, and then move on.
Challenge something on the climate fatigue. I mean, yes, there's all sorts of issues that we're tired of hearing about, whether it's housing or those things that aren't being solved fast enough. Mm. But the data doesn't really support that the idea that the public are tired around climate. The most striking thing in the opinion the exit poll from me. From the general election was 51% of people said they didn't think the last government had gone far enough on climate, including 47% of Fianna Fáil voters and 44% of Fine Gael voters. And it compared to only between 10 and 20%, I can't remember the figure exactly, maybe 14% said the last government had gone too far. But I think what they do want is they want to see leadership from the state. They want the state to be taking action and not to be doing this thing, oh, it's up for you to do your personal behaviour change.
We need better services for
the public.
I'm going to leave that there because I want to touch on the Grace report. Elaine, we spoke to you about this during the week, and there's a lot of talk now about commissions of inquiry, about using that model to investigate into matters like this. And the question people are asking is, do we need a statutory unit permanently there, set up to look into cases like these as they arise?
Mm-hmm. And I think anyone listening to Paula this morning on your own show, and indeed Ian Smith, the other whistleblower who was on radio earlier on this week, would be questioning what benefit the commission of investigation was when you see two whistleblowers who put their heads above the parapet and now feel like it was worthless, like it was meaningless, mm-hmm. and like the state was out to crush them. That was the exact line that Ian Smith gave on radio. And that is not what we should be doing for people who raise concerns about the most vulnerable in our society, whether it was the Grace case, whether it was mother and baby homes we've seen, whether it's the Women of Honour as well. I know that we're looking for a state inquiry. So we do probably need to, as the Taoiseach himself said, perhaps have a re-look at commissions of investigation, given the amount of time that they take. This one took 8 years, is up at 13.6 million now and rising, and will continue to rise when the eventual legal costs come in. And whether that's value for money, whether there are other ways you know, the wrongs and injustices that unfortunately are still being done to people out there can be examined.
Heather?
Yeah, so AINTU has been calling for a permanent office of investigation to be set up for the last number of years. This was originally, you know, ruled out by the Law Reform Commission back in about 2006. And, you know, I don't believe they gave it enough time to see how the whole commission of investigation and inquiries work in this country. What's happening is we're setting up new investigations that we're losing any experience and knowledge that has been created during those investigations. We don't have staff that understand the processes properly. Because it's a new team each time, there's, you know, the systems are quite different and there can be different approaches, and we need to make sure that we get economies of scale when we deliver these.
But like, you might be pushing an open door there, because Micheál Martin seems to be of the view too that these commissions really are not as effective as they could be.
Well, I raised it back with Micheál Martin in 2023 and he refused it at that stage. But it may be the case now, you know, these are going on for such a length of time. They're costing so much money and they're causing distress and difficulty for so many people. And yet there's a big queue of other really worthy investigations that are still waiting to be done. So I'd be delighted if the government's changed their policy on this.
John?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I dived into just volume one of that report last night, and they received 316,000 pages of submissions or documents as evidence. Niall Muldoon's interview on Drive Time, I think, was particularly interesting, where he said, look, if we could get a system, not easy, a system where witnesses can come forward and kind of raise their hands and say, look, we screwed up without being, without being culpable. But at the end of the day, too, we need accountability. But this isn't working in a lot of the cases. And I think I agree with the rest of the panel.
All right. We're going to leave it there. But thank you all very much for being here. Oisín Coughlan from the Stop Climate Chaos Coalition, Padraig Tobin from AIM2, Fianna Fáil's John Lahart, and Elaine Loughlin from the Irish Examiner. And that brings us to the end of the programme. Thank you very much for listening.